Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, and talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a success coach, spokeswoman, and fundraiser with Successimo.com, a free social networking, informational, and inspirational website. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and a winologist expert. She is your host today on January Jones, sharing Successimo stories. So sit back and relax and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones and her eclectic roster of guests on Blog Talk Radio as you learn while you earn. These stories plus sharing equal Successimo.com. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you're entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever met someone who was born in Africa? Would you like to meet someone who went on a 10-day holiday to Bali and took time out to teach 30 orphans how to tie-dye fabric? Tell me, would you like to meet someone who started out with nothing and she is now the director of three successful companies? Let me ask you a question. Do you know what a systems analyst does? Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that you've been looking for? Now, are you ready to learn while you earn? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Successimo Stories. Today I will be introducing you to my guest, who is a success coach extraordinaire. She is providing us with informative and inspirational lessons. Before I introduce my guest, I would love to invite you to call in. The call-in number is 818-431-8506. Now get a pencil and write this down, 818-431-8506. Call us in with any questions that you may have. Now let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. She is an inspirational speaker and a well-known African storyteller, poet, artist, and published author. She is the founder and CEO of the Africa Alive Education Foundation, an organization that supports HIV orphans in Zimbabwe. She is a dynamic entrepreneur who has started life in a new country and who has proven that anything is possible if you have a purpose. Her speaking career began in Norway in 1989, and for 12 years she has worked in the IT industry as a systems analyst, systems support manager, and project manager. She has a Bachelor of Commerce degree and an honor in industrial psychology. She emigrated to New Zealand in 2001 with nothing, and she is now the director of three successful companies. She is married and the mother of three children. She started Medical Recruiters of New Zealand, and she formed Sizizani Creations, a talent agency serving the film and advertising industry, which has been instrumental in supplying ethnic extras for prominent movies such as Peter Jackson's King Kong and James Cameron's Avatar. She formed Walk on the Wild Side Tours, a symbiotic tourism company that takes tourists to Zimbabwe to work with HIV orphans and communities that support them. It is with great pleasure that I welcome today Gertrude Matashi. Good morning, or I should say, yes, it is good morning. You're calling in from New Zealand, aren't you, Gertrude?
Yes, I am. Good morning, January. It's an absolute honor to be on your show this morning.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you. Now, let's get right to it. You were born in Africa. Tell us a little bit about your early childhood.
I haven't had a fascinating early childhood that had a lot of ups and downs. I come from a family of five.
Uh-huh.
I have an older sister and three younger brothers.
Okay.
And the village where I was born is on the eastern highlands of Zimbabwe and Mozambique.
Uh-huh.
And it's the kind of place where you're born there, you will die there, do nothing.
Uh-huh.
But my biggest blessing was my parents. My parents realized that if they gave their children a good education, it would get us out of poverty, and it did. So from the age of six, I started to work. My mother taught us how to make crafts that we sold to pay for school fees. And I learned a lot being by her side. I was the younger of her two children at the time,
uh-huh.
going from door to door, knocking and trying to sell our wares in order for us to go to private school.
Okay.
Which, again, was very unusual for most African children at that time in the colonial days. So I had a good education, and I think that was the foundation that has created everything else in my life.
Uh-huh. Now, what type of school did you go to? Was it a Christian school, or was it a private school?
It was a private Christian school. It was a Dominican convent run by Catholic nuns.
Oh, okay.
In the capital city in Harare, which was then Rhodesia at the time.
Oh, you know, I have a dear friend I went to high school, and she went to Africa, and her name is Sister Katie McGrail, and she taught school in Africa, so I'll have to check with Katie to see if she ever taught at that school. What was the name of the school?
Dominican Convent.
Dominican Convent. Okay, so she was a Dominican nun. So
private school.
Oh, okay. I'll check on that. And how did you go there for grade school and high school?
I went there for my what we call primary school. I guess that's grade school, which is the foundation years.
Uh-huh.
And then we moved to another town thereafter and went to another school that was an all-white school.
Oh.
And by white, I mean, you know, we had racial segregation in Southern Africa, just like South Africa.
Uh-huh.
And most African children would not go to the state schools that were white-owned. And we were one of the first to do that. So, yeah, I have lived through, I have lived many lives. Let's just put it that way.
Now,
an interesting and challenging time.
Okay. Now, you were fortunate because you had siblings that you went to these schools with. So you weren't the only black child in a white school, right?
It was only my sister and I, because the brother who comes after me is 6 years younger.
Uh-huh.
So for most of my schooling years, I was always with my sister, which really helped.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now, were these boarding schools? Were you away from your home?
No. Fortunately, we would go to school from home, which made it easier.
And did your parents, were they educated? Did they get an opportunity to go to college or school?
Yes. My father got a scholarship in 1967, the year that I was born,
uh-huh.
to study in London. He studied as a chartered accountant and took his young wife who studied to become a nurse.
Okay.
So they actually had to leave me at the age of 9 months and went away for 2 years because they couldn't afford to take us with them.
Uh-huh.
So I was actually brought up by my grandmother. I lived with my grand until I was 3 years old. And when they made enough money to send for me and my sister, we also followed and went to London and lived in Clapham Common for a few years while they were finishing off their studies.
That's fascinating. Now, when you look back at your childhood, what is your earliest memory, Gertrude?
I would have to say it's a memory of my gran. I mean, when I really throw my mind back, my grandmother was a fascinating woman, very resourceful. She, watermelons. I have to share this little story with you. So we lived in a village with no electricity, no running water, and it's very, very hot there. And my grandmother devised a way to refrigerate watermelons.
Okay.
Is she would wake up early in the morning, like at 4, 5 o'clock in the morning before the sun came up, and she would go into the field and grab one of her watermelons. So she would grow all the food that we ate, and watermelons was one of it. And she would dig a hole in the sand while the soil was still cold, and she would bury a watermelon. And she would leave a stick with a, her headscarf on a pole so we would know where the watermelon was. And she would go to work in her field, and when we woke up and it got really hot, especially midday, we would go looking for watermelons, and we would exhume these ice-cold watermelons from the soil. So, yes, it would have to be watermelons. Every time I eat them, it takes me back to my childhood.
Oh, my gosh. That is a positively adorable, wonderful memory to have. Now, in your village, was it were the women the dominant ones? Was it a matriarchal society, or were the men dominant?
I would have to say the women, because what happened in Southern Africa is that with colonialism, a lot of men had to leave their wives, their children, to live in the rural areas, and they would go and work in the cities.
Oh, okay.
So even today, if you go into most of Zimbabwean families, everybody has got two homes. They have a home in the city and a home in the rural areas because it was just too expensive to live in the cities with your family. So that forced women to be very strong, very independent, very self-sufficient. It was a fascinating time, I must say.
Well, that laid the groundwork for your feminism and your activism being exposed to your grandmother and the matriarchal influences. You know, we're going to take a commercial break now, and when we come back, Gertrude, I'd like you to share your website information and let everyone know where your books are available. We'll be right back with Gertrude Matashi.
When you think that something is too good to be true, could you ever be wrong? The answer is yes, yes, yes when it comes to Successimo.com, because you will earn while you learn, and it will be free, free, free. Successimo.com is a social networking site that will change the way you learn and earn money while you work on your computer at home. This free website provides continuous learning opportunities while rewarding you for taking lessons and inviting others to join with you, receiving inspirational information. You'll receive points that can be redeemed for merchandise or cash. Just what does free mean to users at successimo.com? It means that there are no fees, no donations, no pledges. You will never need cash, checks, or credit cards. All revenues are generated from advertisers at the website, just like Facebook and Twitter. This too-good-to-be-true social networking site is the newest paradigm on the Internet for home-based business and nonprofit organizations. Do you hate asking people for money? We all do. And the good news is that Successimo is a fundraiser for nonprofits that does not require money. It just requires small amounts of your time or your organization's time to raise funds. When you do lesson activities, you'll receive points that can be redeemed for merchandise or cash. When you think of Successimo.com, you need to think, learn while you earn, and always remember that passion plus purpose equals prosperity. Successimo.com is not only too good to be true, it is unbelievably innovative, and there are no downsides since no money is ever required. Successimo.com is the right website for now because it is the first one ever to pay people to participate. No one else does this. So sign up now and stop whining, start winning, and start being Successimo. Successimo.com is not only beyond priceless, it's a fantastic way to pay it forward.
Welcome back. This is January Jones sharing Successimo stories with my guest, Gertrude Matashi, who has called in and Skyped in from New Zealand. Could you tell us your website and a little bit about your book, Born on the Continent?
Okay, so my website is GertrudeInspires.com, and the website really represents me as a speaker, and it represents my cause, which is the Africa Alive Education Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
My mission basically is to try and reach as many children as I can who've been affected by HIV and AIDS in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're aware that we have staggering numbers of children who have lost both parents, and most of these kids are on the streets. They are hustling to survive. And we're trying to catch them and just give them a childhood for now so they can reach their full potential. So my project actually started off in my husband's home village, and we have taken over a primary school where he went to school and where his father used to teach.
Uh-huh.
And we now look after 360 children.
Wow.
Yeah, we pay for money for school fees, for clothing, for medication, mm-hmm. and supplies. So it's been a fascinating exercise, and the whole project started with me self-publishing my book and finding a way to raise those extra funds. I mean, I'm a mother of three. I'm married, I've got my own personal expenses, but mm-hmm. I had this mission, I had this goal, and I had to find a way to finance it, and the book became the vehicle to do that.
Wonderful.
So if anybody would like to buy a book, when you do buy a book, just realize that you are helping to support a child to go to school.
Now, where can people find your book?
The book is available on my website. It's available on Amazon as well.
Okay. Is it in Kindle form yet?
Yes, it is.
Well, then I will order it this afternoon. I'm so addicted.
Thank you so much.
I'm so addicted to my Kindle that if I don't have it on Kindle, I have a hard time getting around to reading it. I've become quite dependent on it. Tell us a little bit. Let's go back into your personal history because my listeners, I know, are fascinated. Where did you go to university, and when did you leave Africa?
I went to university when I was 27 years old.
Uh-huh.
By then I was married. I had two kids, and we lived in Cape Town for 7 years while my husband was specializing to become an obstetric gynecologist.
Oh, okay.
So that was a fascinating time, especially going back into the work, into the college arena.
Uh-huh.
So having worked for a number of years and then becoming a student.
Now, how did you meet your husband? Was he from your village?
No, I met my husband when I was 17 years old.
Uh-huh.
He actually came to my hometown as a medical student. He got a job there for the uh-huh. holiday. And I happened to know one of his cousins. We were in the same class together in high school. So, yeah, our relationship goes back a good 25 years now. we fell in love and have been together ever since.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, in your biography, I talk about that you went to, you began your speaking career in Norway. Now, how did you get from Africa to Norway? How did that come about?
I was actually in London at the time.
Uh-huh.
I had left home to go and study to get my first degree. And my mission was to get a Bachelor of Commerce degree. And I got pregnant 3 months
uh-huh.
after I started school. And my dreams were dashed. I was down and out in London with no money. And I had actually met a woman in Zimbabwe 2 years prior to this,
mm-hmm.
who had come and had watched me acting in a play that I had written
okay.
about AIDS. I found that the most effective way for me to teach and to communicate what HIV and AIDS was about, especially to people who've never gone to school, who can't read the material that World Health was distributing in our village in helicopters,
uh-huh.
I found that the best way to teach was to teach through storytelling, which is something
okay.
I do really well.
Uh-huh.
So I wrote a play with an AIDS theme, and this woman had watched me acting in this play. She had come to Zimbabwe on a mission with a Norwegian group, and she offered me a scholarship to study. She said, if you want to go to school to take this, you know, as a career, I will personally sponsor you.
Wonderful.
But because in Africa you can't make a living from the arts, I had to turn down her offer.
Mm-hmm.
But she gave me her business card and said, if you are ever in Europe, if you ever need help, I'm a phone call away.
Uh-huh.
And when I did need that help, it just so happened that I found her business card at the bottom of my purse and called her. And she sent me an air ticket, and I went to Norway to take part in a musical production
uh-huh.
about Nelson Mandela called Salt of the Earth.
Uh-huh.
So we toured the whole of Europe with this play. We went as far as the Arctic Circle.
Oh my God.
It was a fascinating, fascinating time of my life.
Uh-huh.
And everybody in Norway, like you, had blonde hair, blue eyes. They had never seen a person of color. And I had people in the streets stopping to touch my skin to see if the color comes off. And questions like, do you eat cheese? Where did you get your clothes from? You know, it was fascinating for them to meet an African person who spoke
mm-hmm.
English well, who was articulate, who was educated.
Right.
Because that year, there was a famine in Ethiopia. And the media was highlighting these stories of African people starving in Ethiopia, and the perception
uh-huh.
was that that was the whole of Africa.
Uh-huh.
So I decided to, again, educate people by sharing my stories and giving presentations and talks. And I think that's really where my speaking career started, because I started being paid to do it.
Okay.
And speaking to people, it was a fascinating time. It kind of found me.
Isn't Norway a wonderful country? My husband's family is from Norway, and his father was born in Bergen, and the rest of the family was on a dairy farm in the middle of Norway called Tengestal. So we get back there quite often, and I'm sure that you were quite a thrill for everyone to meet, because there's not too many people from Africa roaming around Norway.
It is a fascinating country. I must say it was a blessing to have that experience for a few months, because it kind of showed me another way that people can live. It's clean, it's green, their policies are so amazing,
right.
And the people were so kind. I love being there.
Yeah, we enjoy getting back to visit and having our Norwegian relatives come to visit us in this country. So you started speaking in Norway, and then you worked for 12 years in the IT industry as a systems analyst. Now, did that happen in Norway, or did you go back to London or Africa? Where did that come about?
I went into the IT field when I was 19. This was all prior to my leaving for London and then going to Norway.
Okay.
What happened when I was 17 years old is that my father lost his job, and the bank was about to repossess our house.
Mm-hmm.
And what my dad used to do is, during the school holidays, he would put me on a bus and send me to the city and tell me to apply for jobs. I'll go and stay with a cousin of mine. And I would apply for jobs because I had written my high school certificate. And you could get a job at that age. And I had 3 job offers that year. I could have been an air traffic controller, a nurse, or a COBOL programmer. So I took the IT job because they trained you while you were being paid.
Uh-huh.
And I managed to secure the 10 acres of land that my parents live on right now.
Oh, wonderful.
And I did it really as a way to support my parents, to get them back on their feet.
Uh-huh.
I didn't go straight to university after high school. I actually had to correspond and finish my high school education while I was working. So that that's basically how I went into the IT field. I wasn't a good developer. I'm a people person. I need to be talking to people. And I found that systems analysis and design gave me the people contact.
Oh,
so I branched out into that field, and that kind of became my career.
And then you acquired a Bachelor of Commerce degree and an honor in industrial psychology. Now, where did you get that from?
That's when we moved to South Africa, when my husband was specializing to become an obstetric gynecologist. I decided to go back to school and get my university degree.
Uh-huh.
That had always been something on my wish list, some of my bucket list, if you like.
Yeah.
And then I did it. I did it with a husband and two kids, and actually had my third child in my final year. So I was fully pregnant in my final year of studies. And he was born 2 weeks before my final exams.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. He was preterm, and I always believe, my mother always used to say, just because you're pregnant doesn't mean your brain doesn't work.
Yes.
And a lot of friends advised me to take the year out and have the baby, but I was so determined to finish my studies, and I threw it all the way through.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. And let's talk a little bit before the break about Africa Alive, which I know is your mission in life, and we're going to talk about it in detail. But when did you start it, and what was your inspiration?
My inspiration really came from wanting to give back.
Mm-hmm.
It all started really... This was actually Christmas 2004.
Mm-hmm.
My parents had come to New Zealand for the first time. We were having Christmas lunch. And someone called me and said, guess who's switching on the TV? Oprah's in South Africa. And she was standing in a soccer pitch full of children. She went to spend Christmas with 50,000 AIDS orphans. And as she stood on that soccer pitch full of children, it just reminded me of what I had left behind in Africa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I sat with my mother, and we did a head count of the number of orphaned children in my immediate family, and we counted 49 children.
Wow.
My grandmother had 11 children.
Uh-huh.
She had 32 grandchildren, and 19 of us have died from HIV-related diseases and AIDS.
Wow.
So I decided I wanted to make sure that these kids got to go to school, they got to eat every day,
mm-hmm.
and I finished writing my book. I had been writing my book for a number of years, but that just gave me that extra incentive, if you like,
mm-hmm.
to write the book, finish it, self-publish it, and try and sell it to raise money for the children.
Okay.
So every book that I sell goes towards paying for education, food, clothing, and getting these kids to school. And
wow.
In the last 7 years, it has expanded into the organization that you know, which is the Africa Alive Education Foundation.
That is amazing. And again, for my listeners, the book is Born on the Continent by Gertrude Matashi, and it is available at her website, which is GertrudeInspires.com. And that's Gertrude, GETRUDE. And her book is also available at Amazon.com. And it's also available in Kindle form, which will make it very accessible for yours truly. When you look back on your most very successful life, could you share with us something that happened to you that was unexpected? People would think of it as a setback, but in reality, it's probably what became your aha moment and propelled you forward. Could you share something from your past life that my listeners would enjoy hearing about?
I would have to say it was my coming to the United States in August 2001.
Uh-huh.
I got on an aeroplane. The political troubles in Zimbabwe had started, and we were just trying to find a safe place to bring up our kids.
Uh-huh.
So I got on this plane was stopped in transit in Johannesburg from Zimbabwe on my way to New York. And the person who was serving me picked up a small typographic error on my daughter's visa.
Uh-huh.
The U.S. Embassy had misspelled the passport number on the visa sticker.
Oh, dear.
Instead of printing 2 and 1, they printed 1 and 2.
Oh, dear.
And told us we could not proceed. We had to go back to Zimbabwe.
Oh, no.
I remembered sitting at home and crying and thinking, what kind of a God would do this to me?
Uh-huh.
You know, I was on that plane. I was going somewhere safe with my children.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Embassy refused to correct this error and apologized and explained that they had changed their rules 2 weeks before and that the new rule was that we had to show that we had $6 million in our bank account before they would correct that error. I know. We lost everything January. We lost our entire life savings because of that small error. And this all happened before September 11, because the building where I was going to work went down with the Twin Towers.
Oh, my gosh.
I was only spending 2 weeks in New York. My aunt's destination was New Orleans. I paid a deposit to rent a house in New Orleans that disappeared 2 years later with Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, no.
I ended up in New Zealand because of my misspelled name, and I'm sure you've noticed how my name is misspelled.
Repeat that question.
Have you noticed that my name is misspelled?
Oh, it is. Okay.
It should be Gertrude. There's an R missing in my name. My name is actually Gertrude Mache.
Right. Yes. It's very unique.
I had a cousin who was on the internet one day, saw my name, and she's the one who said to Gertrude, if you have faith, find the money, come to New Zealand, you will not regret it.
Oh, wonderful.
So coming to New Zealand, act of faith, and my life has been magical from the day that I landed in this country.
So that is that. Thank you for sharing. That is a very unexpected, horrible thing that turned out to be probably the most wonderful thing that ever happened in your life. We're going to take another break and a brief message about your host, and we will be back with Gertrude, whose name has been misspelled, after our break.
Lately, there has been a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, you'll find out what people whine about, why they whine, and most importantly, how to stop them from whining. The 11th Commandment deals with all of the complaints and causes, and there are over 100 plus cures for whining with humor and hope in this edition. This is the perfect gift to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shalt Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. It'll make you laugh at yourself and others. John Curtis, a distinguished author, reminds us that it is the perfect gift for anyone who wants to be healthy and happy with humor, honey, and hope, and for people who are just hopeless. You can find Thou Shalt Not Whine at Amazon.com and at the Successimo.com Coaches Bookstore. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. As Sally Shields, best-selling author, states, January Jones gets to the core of the matter with her quick-witted tips and cures that cut to the chase and will put any seasoned whiner to shame. So get reading and stop whining and start winning with Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th Commandment.
This is January Jones welcoming you back for the second half of our interview with Gertrude Mache from New Zealand. Now let me ask you, have you ever heard about an organization called Africa Alive Education Foundation? Do you want to hear more about helping HIV orphans in Zimbabwe? Tell me, would you like to visit Zimbabwe? I know I would. Also, have you ever heard of Walk on the Wild Side tours? Yes, this is an opportunity waiting for you. Better yet, do you have any questions for our guest? If you do, call in. The number is 818-431-8506. Now, are you ready to meet someone who can help you make big changes in small steps? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then I'd like to welcome you to the second half of our show. Gertrude, let's talk a little bit about what happened when you went to New Zealand. What a big change that was in your life. Tell us about it. How did your children and husband react to the move?
I'll tell you, my children took to this country like fish and water. we struggled. I mean, we struggled adjusting to the change, to being so far away from family and home.
Uh-huh.
But my kids just fitted right in. It was amazing just watching them evolve. I'll give you an example. This was the first time we had lived in a place where there was snow, and they had never seen snow.
Uh-huh.
So we took them to ski fields one day during one of the school holidays, and we were wanting to learn how to ski, so we hired a tutor, and these children got on these skis and just took off. They used to rollerblade at home, so their balance was perfect,
uh-huh.
And to this day, I still don't know how to ski, and my children are amazing skiers. So it's wonderful just watching them evolve and grow up and fit into this environment. We had a few challenges, you know, what it's like when you're moving and you're in a new place and you don't know anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, step by step, year by year, things got better, and we feel right at home here. We're now New Zealand citizens.
Now, you got there, and you created three new careers. You got there with nothing, and you became very successful. Let's talk about how you started Medical Recruiters of New Zealand, and what do you do with them?
Okay, so my first job in New Zealand was as a systems analyst.
Uh-huh.
I did that for 1 year, but it was very, very challenging to try and hold down a full-time job and have three young kids at home.
Right.
So I formed Medical Recruiters of New Zealand because I was trying to find a way that I could make some money from home. And when we arrived in New Zealand and my husband was job hunting, I realized there was a need for health professionals in this part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Africa to all our friends and told them where we were and asked them if they wanted to come to New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
And five of my husband's friends said yes, and they were all doctors.
Okay.
So I found work, and I placed five of my husband's colleagues and made $125,000 in 3 months sitting in my bedroom slippers at home.
Oh,
I accidentally hit $1 million idea, and that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years. I've been recruiting medical staff for New Zealand and Australia.
Isn't that wonderful? Because what you did is you went to a country, you found a need, and you creatively became successful. That, you know, that is the mantra we use in Successimo, as to once you're helping other people, success follows. Don't you agree?
I do. There is something about giving of yourself that brings it back tenfold.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a wonderful story to share. Now tell us a little bit about you formed Simzizani Creations. Did I pronounce that right?
That's correct. Simzizani Creations is a casting agency.
Uh-huh.
I had gone to a presentation where Peter Jackson was talking about how they made Lord of the Rings. I'm sure everybody's watched the movie.
Yeah.
It was intriguing us to be here in the country at the time watching this amazing film come to being.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had a passion for storytelling, and you know, film is another way of sharing stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to listen to him about how they made the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in the audience thinking to myself, gosh, I wouldn't mind acting in his next film. we had an opportunity to ask him questions at the end of his talk.
Uh-huh.
And I put up my hand and I asked how I could get involved, because at that time I knew they were casting for King Kong.
Uh-huh.
They were working on the next movie.
Okay.
So I was told, he told me to get my CV or my resume to his casting director,
uh-huh.
which I did. I met him on a Thursday, and by Tuesday of the next week, I got a call to come for an audition.
Oh, okay.
And got a part, King Kong. I actually got two parts in King Kong. And so I realized that they were actually looking for ethnic extras. They asked me if there was anyone else I knew in Wellington who wanted to take part in the film.
Uh-huh.
And they were looking for 360 extras.
Oh, my gosh.
To take part in one. So instantly I realized there was a business there. And I
uh-huh.
said to them, if I can come up with that number,
uh-huh.
can I present it to you as a business case and supply you with the extras? They said yes. So I took up that challenge. I had a weekend to run around Wellington with digital cameras hitting on anyone found. We recruited Indian people and Maori people. They actually had to spray paint us one color so we looked like from one tribe. Absolutely fascinating experience just watching them, you know, create this film. And
uh-huh.
I turned that business and realized that my biggest strength in this part of the world was my point of difference, which is the fact that I'm African.
Okay.
And showing other people of African descent how they can tap into their biggest skill, which is just being themselves and presenting
mm-hmm.
themselves for film and advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do in Access. We put people forward for commercials, for movies. And it has been a fascinating few years being involved in films like King Kong and Avatar and a lot of other productions that come to New Zealand, because this is now the Hollywood of this part of the world. The Hollywood of Australasia is Wellington.
Oh, right.
So,
right.
Again, I found place at the right time.
Okay. Now, you also worked on Avatar with James Cameron, which was just an amazing, amazing movie. How many extras did you have to supply for that movie?
We got in about 15 to 20 people.
Uh-huh.
We actually involved in a scene that was deleted, can you believe it? So if anybody is listening, buy the box set and watch the deleted scenes. The opening scene of was supposed to be New York City, futuristic New York City.
Uh-huh.
And we're walking on the streets of New York, right behind the main actor. And they ended up deleting the scene, but we had a fascinating time watching James Cameron, you know, bring
uh-huh.
this thing into reality. Yeah, we've been blessed in that sense. And my children and I get involved in all of these films. All my kids want to be actors, or they've been involved in theater, drama. So I put them in there and get them as much exposure as possible.
Oh, wonderful. And you're creating such, you're not only giving them great opportunities, you're creating wonderful, fantastic, fabulous memories for them that will last forever. Now on your resume, we should have had something that we had, that you had been in these movies.
So true. Very, very true.
That is so exciting. You know, we're going to take another break and hear from our sponsor, SuccessMo.com. And, you know, Gertrude, you are just my idea of the ideal success coach, and we're hoping that in the future you'll be able to share some of your experiences and lessons with our listeners. When we come back, we're going to talk about your Walk on the Wild Side tours, which I would love to promote for you. We'll be right back with Gertrude Matashi from New Zealand.
Let me ask you, are you ready to become a cash cow? Would you like to get paid while you're spending time at your computer? Let's face it, if you're on it all the time, you might as well be earning while you're learning. You may be asking now just how does SuccessMo.com work? SuccessMo.com is the new paradigm in social networking with big lessons and big rewards. Simply put, it is a change in the way people will learn, earn, work, and live right now and in the future. Its primary purpose is to let people become successful in whatever areas of their life that they desire. We have found that when rewarded with valuable merchandise and cash, people are motivated to continue their learning process. All you will need to do will be short lesson activities that can be articles, videos, audios, blogs, or forums. They take only a few minutes at your computer, and they will reap great rewards. At Successimo.com, you will never have to reinvent the wheel or anything else. We will provide you with success coaches who will motivate, encourage, and support you as you create your own Successimo story. And more than that, Successimo.com provides you with money. You'll have the opportunity to earn money while you're learning to be successful. The lesson activities at Successimo are from the world's foremost instructors. Our success coaches are experts in their fields with proven and demonstrated experience. Many of them are authors, speakers, teachers, entrepreneurs, and successful businessmen and women. We strive to bring you success coaches with diverse backgrounds and life experiences. We continually grow our resource base of content providers to serve you continually for your development desires and needs. It is easier than you think to build your own network by just referring your associates, employees, friends, and family. Much to your amazement, Successimo.com will take on a virtual reality life and connect you to a global social networking experience. There are no geographic or physical limitations to this enterprise. So now it's time for you to become a Successimo subscriber. And always remember that on the Internet, innovation plus ideas will equal income. It's time for you to step up to the plate and hit that home run you've always been dreaming about. The timing is right for you to use your creativity and courage to start collecting the cash flow that is the future of social networking on the Internet. Yes, you deserve to be that cash cow right now. Successimo.com is not only beyond priceless, it's a fantastic way to pay it forward.
January Jones, welcoming you back with my guest, Gertrude Matashi, who is Skyping in from New Zealand. And I hope we can look forward to you working with us in the future with Successimo and signing up everyone in New Zealand and Africa to help your Africa Alive Education Foundation through Successimo. I wanted to talk about your tours. Now, this is your third career. You are an amazing young woman. Walk on the Wild Side Tours. That's the greatest name. Fantastic.
It is a bit of a walk on the wild side in a number of ways. The recession, I think all of my entrepreneurial ventures have evolved out of necessity, out of need, out of being forced to think outside the box. The recession has made it really, really difficult to try and fundraise for the children.
Uh-huh.
And I decided to create an entity that could give back to the people who give.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the trip is about. We go on a 15-day trip
wow.
to Zimbabwe to work with the community and the children. Everybody who comes on these trips is supported in terms of raising the money for their airfare and the money that they contribute to the children. And we walk on the wild side because we get up close to nature like nowhere else in the world in Zimbabwe. So we spent 10 days working with the community, working with the children.
Mm-hmm.
Our last 5 days, we walk on the wild side. We go to the Victoria Falls.
Oh, okay.
And I found a farmer who has a pride of lions that are orphans that have been reared in captivity.
Uh-huh.
And you can go for a walk in the bush with these amazing creatures.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most humbling thing I've ever done. You have to do it at least once in your lifetime.
Okay.
We go on a We go bungee jumping off the Victoria Falls Bridge, which is one of the highest bridges in the whole of Southern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it 3 times. you can go whitewater rafting. It's a trip for adrenaline junkies, I have to tell you. So I love for people to come and give of themselves, but to get something back, which is why I coined the term symbiotic tourism.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people come to Africa to see the sights, to see the wildlife.
Right.
But what we're really looking for is people who want to give back, who want to give of themselves, because we're looking for knowledge, we're looking for skills. And in the 10 days when you work with the community and the children, you are teaching what you have in your head and you're imparting those skills.
Oh, what a fantastic opportunity. How often do you do these tours?
We are going to be doing them every quarter as of this year.
Okay.
So I have my next trip coming up in March, another one in June, August, and then November later in the year. So this year we have four trips.
Four trips. And
yeah.
If anyone was interested in joining you on these tours, what website would they go to?
They would go to AfricaAliveOnline.com.
Uh-huh.
Or they can find me on Facebook. Just Facebook me. Mention that you listened into the show. It's always good to know who's online and who's listening and who's heard the message.
Right.
And I will connect you and give you more information.
Oh, wonderful. That, sounds like a trip that my husband and I might want to put on our bucket list. I think it sounds like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see Africa and to contribute and also to meet Gertrude. Now, does your husband go with you on these tours?
He unfortunately can't go all the time. We are
mm-hmm.
going together in March. With work commitments, he can't get away all the time. So most of the time I do this on my own. Fortunately, the children are now grown up.
Uh-huh.
My oldest son is turning 23 this year. My daughter is turning 21. And my youngest son is turning 15. So they kind of take over with what needs to be done at home while I'm away, which is great.
Okay. And is there an age limit on these tours? Are children invited to go?
Yes, we're actually inviting children to come. If children do come, if they're under 18, I do recommend they come with one of their parents.
Of course.
It's a good experience for children, especially children growing up in the Western world who have everything, to experience
yes.
what it's like to live in the village where there's nothing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Living in an environment where there's no electricity, no running water for 10 days is a challenging experience, and it's a life-changing experience as well.
Oh, my gosh. I think this is something that I will definitely look into because it sounds like a fascinating opportunity. This might be something I would love to share with some of my grandchildren because, as you said, children in the Western world, they have no idea about what it's like in places where people are dealing with HIV and survival. That is a fantastic opportunity, and I'm glad you're sharing it with everyone. And how many people do you have on these tours?
We take small groups, no more than 10.
Okay.
It makes it fun. It makes it intimate. Maximum is 10 per group.
Uh-huh. And everyone just flies to South Africa to meet you there, or how do you get them all together?
Yes, we coordinate everything. We buy all the air tickets for everybody. We fly into Johannesburg, and what we've actually factored in now is a tour of Johannesburg. We actually go and see Nelson Mandela's house.
Oh, my gosh.
In Soweto. Yes, and we spend 2 days in Johannesburg. That's where we buy most of our supplies. And we truck all the goods through by road, and then we fly into Harare and then drive to the village from the capital city, Harare. So, yeah, that's something that people have asked for, is so that you're coming to Southern Africa anyway. Why not go and see Nelson Mandela's house?
Oh my God.
Did that last year with the last group, and it was just fascinating being in that space.
Oh, okay. Now, how long have you been doing? How long have you been doing Walk on the Wild Side tours?
We started last year in July. Last year in July, yeah. So it's a very new company, and, I mean, we found a way to reach thousands of children with this trip. Our plan for this year is to actually take 100 people if we can.
Okay. That is just fascinating. You are fascinating, and thank you. I can't begin to thank you so much for sharing your fabulous life. And when you look back on your life, what advice do you have for young people who are listening to our show?
I guess the biggest advice I would give for young people who are on the show, who are going into life and looking for where they want to be in the world in terms of career, profession, I would say tap into something that you're really good at. I found that the formative years of my life working as a COBOL programmer were challenging, were hard. It was a job because I wasn't doing something I was really good at.
Uh-huh.
Now, what I'm good at is speaking.
Yes.
And when I was a child growing up, in class and in school, I was always punished for talking. Now I get paid to do it. So there is always something in your area of